Hello, I'm Peter Ayers, and you're listening to Stages, the podcast that converses...
The reality of that 8-show a week slog is really hard.
When I start on a character, I have to draw them, and I'm not an artist.
This is an effect built in myth and mystery.
So you'd be sitting in this tiny little bio box with radiators all around you.
Which was a funny thing, because I don't think that play would have happened in that way if it wasn't at Griffin.
You're a bit different to the other girls in this area.
Yes, I thought, yes, I am.
That was the days when they could smell an actor or a singer and think, oh, I've got 6 weeks.
My sisters really taught me that I had to be versatile.
This ostrich, pink ostrich feather sticking up out of my hair, out of this wig.
My first career, as it were, was preparation for my second career.
And her face was beaming. It was just beaming at me.
I hadn't lost any of my passion or love for it, so it's been a joy to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Peter Ayers, and welcome to Stages, the podcast that converses with creatives about craft and career. Karen Johnson-Mortimer began her professional career at the age of 15 in the Cole Porter musical Anything Goes, starring Tony Lamond. She has subsequently carved a dynamic career in musical theatre, contributing via a succession of roles. As a performer, Karen played Cassie in the original Australian production of A Chorus Line and appeared in musicals as diverse as Company, The Conquest of Carmen Miranda, Dames at Sea, Kiss Me Kate, No No Nanette, Irene, Cabaret and Footloose. Karen's vast choreographic credits include a variety of experiences. She crafted dance and movement for the Reg Livermore productions of Turns, Wonder Woman and Sacred Cow, Grease, the mega musical, an Anzac military tattoo, an opening ceremony segment at the 2000 Sydney Olympics, and on ABC television, The Norman Gunston Show and Farnham and Byrne. A new direction pursuing directorial roles as associate, resident and director in her own right have seen Karen steer a number of prominent commercial productions, including My Fair Lady, 9 to 5 and Annie. Karen remounted the Korean language production of Wicked in Seoul, and was resident director for the 2009 production of Chicago, and was back for the 2019 production. She's recently returned to the rehearsal room and is as busy as ever. Karen recently launched the new season of Wicked, playing at the Lyric Theatre, and now shifts focus to the return of another audience favourite, Kanda and Ebb's Chicago. It is a great pleasure to welcome Karen Johnson-Mortimer to the Stages podcast. Karen Johnson-Mortimer, how lovely to be chatting to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
On Stages. And I might just set the scene. We're on location at the Lyric Theatre in Sydney, where you've just finished a cover call for Wicked.
I have. We opened this time last week, and which was very exciting and a fabulous evening. And now it's down to the extra hard work of getting all of our wonderful understudy covers up for this fabulous production. So, yes, we've just done a four-hour call in there, and they're remarkable.
So you're the resident director, which is somebody who's responsible for the maintenance of the show, is that right?
Yeah, you work associate.
Associate? that's good, right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, because there's resident, there's associate, there's
that's
executive.
Right. Yeah. So it's, my job, particularly when I first started on Wicked, was definitely as the resident. But then as the productions go on throughout the world, I've been to Korea a few times. And so I went over and I mounted one of the Korean language productions a few years ago. And so I went up and set it up, and then the American creatives, and we crossed over. So it's a bit of a tag team sometimes with a show such as this that goes on for so long and travels the world as it does. I think there's a big team, really, a big team of all of us around the world that... slit into one another's spots. Yeah.
Do you dream Wicked? Or have you found yourself dreaming it?
No, when you leave it, because it's been quite a few years since the last one I did was the Korean language production. But the minute, it was almost like day one when we started rehearsals again, it was just like, oh, I never left. And getting to opening night. It's, as you know, it's a big show. It's technically a big show, and a huge cast. There's so much to think about and so much to make sure works. And if there's one little inkling of one part of the show that's missing, sometimes they don't all connect. So you dream it that way to make sure that you didn't miss anything.
It's a lovely milestone in Australia, or a touchstone in Australian theatre. I've seen Wicked probably four times in Australia. And it's lovely to see the different actors bringing different energy and different interpretation to the characters, you know.
Oh, it is.
The Wizard, for example, you know, started off with Rob Guest and then Bert Newton, and Reg Livermore's done it, Simon Gallagher.
Yes, yeah. And each brings something new to it. I mean, in the crux of the show, in the end, the show is the show, and you can't step out of the parameters too much. But what is joyful is when you see certain performers and you know... You just know the charisma that they hold and how they bring that into the character. And particularly, in, as you said, with the Wizards. I mean, and Todd, look at Todd, fantastic.
Yeah, doing a splendid job at the moment, yeah. And the search for your two leads, Elphaba and Glinda, that must be huge to find young women who are, you know, fit the roles perfectly.
Massive. And I think we had over 2,000 registrations to audition for the show. I think in the end we saw 1,600, and it was the Australian creative team. We did all the auditions. And we started off in Melbourne, and as you do, we're looking particularly for whatever. But we were doing auditions for the ensemble. And Sheridan walked in and was coming in to be auditioned for part of the female ensemble. Walked in, sang, I can't even remember what song she sang, but it was a great voice, obviously. And we all looked across the table and said, oh, that's great, yes, no, she'll be fantastic in this role. As she was walking out, the accompanist turned around to us and said, I don't know if you're interested, but I know Sheridan, I've taught her at whatever college that she was at, and she said, she's got Defying Gravity in her book, would you like to hear it? And we said, sure, why not? So, yes, this was an it moment when she came in, and then she sang it and we all sat back, and then you just go, that's fantastic, can she act it? So sent her away, she came back, she did the scenes, we worked on that for a couple of days, back and forward, yes. And then you think about it and you go, if this young girl, because she's young, gets this role, it's going to be not only a massive change in her life, but it's going to be something that she's going to be thrust in a world that she hasn't been, particularly with media. And, you know, being one of the front leading ladies, stepping from here to the front leading lady of the show everybody in Australia wanted to get into. Huge leap. Could she handle it? Handling it with flying colours. So I think that's, for our Elphaba, that was very, very exciting. We all knew of Courtney. We've all seen Courtney. What a wonderful performer she is.
She was in Frozen, wasn't she?
She was in Frozen, yeah. She was. And so when she came in, I mean, there were quite a lot that came in that, you know, yes, but how does it all fit together? But she was quite something special as well. And I think the chemistry between the two of them is fabulous and continues to grow.
I love the thought that these young women who were in their 20s, early 20s probably, were little girls when they first saw that first production of Wicked.
Exactly. Not just those two, like practically the whole cast. No, you know, I feel 120 now, because every time they say to me, oh, I was 8 and I came in a theatre party to see it and I thought I really wanted to be in that show. And I'm telling you, I guarantee a half of the cast, well, that's the age that they all are.
Yeah.
They all tell you when they first saw Wicked. And they were little.
and there's a great fan club for Wicked, isn't it? People
who
come back again
goodness.
And again. And,
yes, yeah. They do. I don't know how they afford it. I remember last time there was a core section of the fans that travelled around the country with us, and they'd always be there at the stage door. And I used to mark, how did they afford this?
Yeah, yeah.
But they're that, you know, that's how much they adore the show.
Well, thankfully, there's things like the lottery now where you can go in and hopefully get cheap
tickets.
Right.
Yeah.
For the fan.
Yeah.
Karen, I'm going to read some lyrics to you and tell me what they mean to you. Give me somebody to dance for. Give me somebody to show. Let me wake up in the morning to find I have somewhere exciting to go.
Those lyrics mean a very defining part of my career,
yes.
Is what those lyrics mean. That's Cassie's song out of A Chorus Line. And speaking of young, I got the role when I was 21 years of age. So it was something quite amazing. I was working at the time in Reg Livermore's Wonder Woman, when they put out the auditions for a chorus line, and I remember it being one of the longest processes I'd ever gone through. It was quite something, you know, from that an initial, everybody wanted, just like Wicked, everybody wanted to be in a chorus line. So, you know, hundreds audition, hundreds and hundreds, and then they whittle it down and whittle it down, and then you come back. And so it was back and forward all the time. And then finally, it finally got back to, I think it must have been a good couple of months, to the casting or the final day of auditions, and whether you found out you had the show or whether you didn't. And it was held at the Seymour Centre, and I think it's the York Theatre, isn't it, the one that goes down. And finally we'd all done our last dancing and we've all done our last singing. I've found some photos recently that have been sent to me of my final singing audition with Fran Lee with Got Fame. So they brought everybody in at the end of all of that and sat us down on that stage. And then they sort of said, okay, we're now going to, like a proper elimination, right. Elimination. So they would go through names, so-and-so, David Atkins. Congratulations, got the role of Mike. Yay, and they'd all race off and they'd do a few more. Marriott Rupps, you know, stand up, you've got the role of Val. Da-da-da. Karen Johnson, I stand up and they go, oh, not yet, just later, and sat me down again. That happened.
Which is what happens in the show.
Correct. And I didn't, of course, realise it at the time. I was just panicking because I think they did it to me three times until finally I was the last one on stage, sitting on the stage. And your heart's just going and you just think, they're just going to say thanks very much, you did very well, bye-bye. And they said, no, you got the role of Cassie. But they put you through that from day one to the day that they told you that you got the role. It was amazing, yeah.
It's a clever ploy also, directorially, I guess, to give the actors, the dancers, that psychological experience that they have to reenact eight times a week.
That's right.
In the musical.
Yeah. At 21, I wasn't aware of that. I was just like, have I got it or haven't I? I don't know.
To have something that I can believe in, to have something to be, use me, choose me, God, I'm a dancer dances. Those Ed Kleban lyrics to Marvin Hamlisch's wonderful score. I mean, to a dancer, that is the mecca of musicals, isn't it?
It is.
That's what you're
It all. Is. And to get that role and to be able to sing and dance that every single night, not only being exhausting, was, you know, rich and hit me like an hit any dancer that had come up, you know, from age of three. All of those stories on stage, practically all of us lived through. Somehow they did manage to get people that really resonated with those stories. And well, I started at three, you know, all of that, went to ballet school, tap, dance, all of that, everything that was said. Yeah.
You mentioned David and Marriott, but you know, Angela Ayres, Ross Coleman, Jack Webster,
Peter DePano.
What a phenomenal cast.
It was a phenomenal cast. It really was. It was, and I had worked with a lot of them before, so it was such a bonding experience for a lot of us because we were friends, you know. Camille Edwards, like they're just Glenys Knock. I mean, I think of our line often. And we all do sort of keep in contact, you know, at different times. But it was Pamela Gibbons, like, you know, really fabulous
Sheila,
line. Fabulous line.
I think it was Martha Graham that said that a dancer dies twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard that quote before?
I haven't. I'm trying to just think.
Because when they actually do leave, shuffle off this mortal coil, but also when they stop dancing.
That's it. That's the one I was thinking. Yeah.
What was it like when you stopped dancing?
I was ready to stop dancing. The last full-out musical that I danced in was Cabaret for John Frost. It was Richard Werick directed it. And it was a small company, so I was playing for all on cost, but I also sang Money. It was a bit of a jigsaw. Angela Ayres was in it, but I actually did dance the opening number and Chairs and all of that. And I remember that after eight shows a week of that, and I think I was 40. And I enjoyed it, but I hobbled home every night, and I thought dancing and I had three kids by that stage, so I had my family, so I, you know, if maybe I could have managed a little longer dancing if I didn't if you didn't physically have three children that were little and that you were bringing up. So, no, it was time. And it was, yeah. However, I still watch and I look, and in my head I'm still dancing around. Yes.
Such a physical expression. Do you carry war wounds today?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't stump me on the war wounds.
I think you posted something recently on Facebook, which was an old clip from a Tonight Show, a variety show.
Oh, it was Farnham and Byrne.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, and I think my daughter's, a friend of my daughter's found it, and who was a John Farnham fan, and apparently had been watching everything Farnham had done, and then had been watching this clip for a couple of years, and then finally texted my daughter and said, "Is this your mother?" And she looked and she said, "Yes, that is. Very young, my mother." So, yes, it was, and it was fun to look at yourself dancing like that, because we don't have any, there's no, as far as I know, there's no video of our version of a chorus line. You know, archivals weren't something that were happening in those days. I have a few things of a lot of the television appearances that I did, but as far as the theatre, no, not really. So I know what I felt like dancing, but to watch it, it's a little bit different. Yeah.
So dancing from the age of three.
Mm-hmm.
Did your parents send you off to ballet class, or you wanted
no,
to do that?
No, I think it was up at the local School of Arts hall, just near where we're all going to school, and I think my mum just, like mums do, or take her up to ballet class. And it was the teachers that I stayed with right through until I left professionally. So went right through. I was an Irish dancer as well. They taught Irish dance. I was the Australian Irish dancing champion and went to the World Championships when I was 15 in Ireland. This is before it all became very fashionable.
River dance, yeah.
Yes, before all of that. Apparently I was the first Australian to be in the World Championships in Ireland. So we did everything, tap, ballet, Irish, all of that. And it was through that how I always wanted to be in theatre. But when we went overseas, my dancing teacher got me to audition for the Royal Ballet School in London while I was there. And I was accepted. And so when I came back, we started full-time ballet classes for me, hopefully, to go back over there. But I, in my heart, I knew I didn't want to be really in a ballet company. And we had Robina Beard, who was my jazz teacher at the time at the studio, and she was performing in Anything Goes at the Richbrook Theatre with Tony Lamont, Ronnie Fraser, Robina.
Tony Gapin,
yeah. Another fabulous cast. And one of the girls left the show and Robina was said, "Why don't you audition?" So that was my exit, stage left, straight into musical theatre.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So at Royal Ballet School, there was no attraction there because you didn't want to be a ballerina? Or
I think I loved ballet, but I knew what a ballet company, you know, being in a ballet company was like.
The
I sang.
Yeah.
You
had other skills.
And that's what I loved doing. I loved comedy. I mean, Bob Hope, you know, from the age of 10, Bob Hope was every road movie I could get or anything like that. So musical theatre was so appealing. When I was at the dancing school, my mum used to have all those theatre parties. I saw Jill Perryman in Funny Girl, in I Do, I Do. I saw Promises with Nancy Hayes. So that's what I wanted to do. I knew that's what I wanted to do.
It's quite a contrast between Irish dancing and ballet, of course, because one is about being in the air and the other one is being quite grounded, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. There's the soft shoe and a lot of, oh God, if you look at it these days, a lot of the hard shoes, they fly. Those Irish dancers fly. So it was, yeah. And that's where a lot of my injuries start.
So your entry into musical theatre, I imagine that there is a woman called Betty Pounder.
Yes.
Who figured quite largely in that entrance.
Oh, she was wonderful. So, as I said, I was doing Anything Goes, and on my first, when I first took over the show, the very first person I met was Tony Sheldon, and because he was there, because his mum was in the show, so he was in and out of the theatre with her. And I remember a card on my table that said, "You don't know me yet. Good luck tonight. You don't know me yet, but you will very soon." And it was Tony Sheldon. So that was, again, another fantastic sort of experience just to... He was the same age as me, but the history that he knew, and as we all know, he's an encyclopedia of musical theatre.
And his career would have started by then, was it? Had he done A Hard God?
No, I don't think he would have done that by then, but he'd certainly
still
been on television, and
right.
You know, he'd done a lot of things like that. So while we were doing Anything Goes, Betty Pounder came and saw the show in Sydney, and she just said, we're doing a musical in Melbourne in next year called No No Nanette, and I hope you audition for it. So that's how I met and started working with Betty, and to this day she is one of the greatest mentors I've ever had in this industry.
A lot of people say that. The Richbrook, what was that? That was
Well, it's Australia Hall. It's down, it's called Australia Hall, but it was the Richbrook Theatre, and that's where Godspell first was shown. Anything, there was a lot of theatre. It was 400 seat, just a little theatre, but it was, quite, nobody knows about it. In fact, look it up.
Well, yes. A lot of people say they've performed there, of course, and they talk about it a lot. And,
but
Sydney's not been good with its history of theatres, have they? Knocking them down at willy-nilly. And
I cry every time I drive down Quay Street. And the Madge isn't there anymore, you know? It's sad. It's sad. That was a lot of my memories as a kid. There were a lot of shows I saw, as well as the ballet. The Australian Ballet used to perform there, so,
No, No, Nanette, that's what Pounder suggested you audition for.
Yes.
And it's with the firm, J.C. Williamson's.
With the firm.
Do you remember much about that audition? Was it open call? Or?
I remember we auditioned in Sydney, and then the people that were in the finals got flown down to Melbourne for... I guess when you think about it, when we were there, we'd already bought, if you were in Melbourne, you were cast, because I remember that we had fittings and all of that sort of thing that day. But that was the final audition, and I think it was up in what they call the sunroom, which is now gone as well. The big studios at Pounder used to sort of take rehearsals, as well as all of her fabulous classes that she used to take. So it was another big company, like a huge ensemble, the singing ensemble as well as the dancing ensemble. I mean, it was just like walking into another world, because even though Anything Goes was my first show, it was small. It was a small production. This was unbelievable. Sid Charisse.
International stars.
International
stars.
Yvonne
De Carlo came out to replace Sid.
She replaced Sid. So it was just, I mean, it was just an entry into the industry that I just thought, kid in a candy store.
Now, coming down from Sydney, were there things like living away from home allowance?
Yes. I don't think they called it living away from home allowance, but it was...
You got some sort of stipend to pay rent and live.
Yes. No, there was certainly a loading for all of that. I mean, let's remember, in those days there were no mobile phones. If you wanted to call home... interstate phone calls were incredibly expensive, and we discovered that if you rang down from the Melbourne GPO on a Saturday between shows, there was a phone there that didn't work properly, and you got free phone calls. So everybody in the company used to wait down there and line up so that they could call home. So there was the only way that you could communicate regularly was still write letters. And that was another fantastic thing. You used to walk into the Madge in Melbourne, and all those letterboxes were there, and you'd race to see if there were any letters for you. And I often used to open up Kevin Johnson's, sadly, and he'd open mine because it was
Kay Johnson.
Kay Johnson. Yeah. But so my mother was very concerned, because I was 16, and I said, they all live together. We get a flat and we all live together. No. So she found... this hostel for me, Catholic hostel, just at Richmond, which turned out to be not so, I think it was a house where there was wayward girls and everything, so I was out of there within a couple of weeks. I think the Catholics don't exactly have the same thing in mind of you, Mum, or they weren't paying attention at that house, that's for sure. 16. It was an eye-opener.
Well, the ensemble dressing room is a very special place. I mean, you're all in there together and sharing it. Who was in the dressing room with you?
Oh, fabulous. I can almost name it down. Carly Lee was at the end. Rini Ann Martini. I think Jan Mannion, April Perkins, myself, Sue O'Connor, K. Kay Webster, who passed just recently, I saw. Julie Tanner. Karen Henderson. I can still almost see it.
That's amazing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Do you know one of the best things that happened on the first Chicago that I did? When we went to Melbourne, we were playing Her Majesty's, and my office was that dressing room, but cut down. And that was I'll never forget that. Everyone said, oh, I was really sorry, you're downstairs and all of that. And when I walked, I went, no, this is perfect.
It's a lovely serendipity.
Yeah, this is exactly where I want to be. Yeah.
So some of those dancers have done a few shows with the firm, I imagine, and they took you under their wing. And
absolutely, yes. Lindy Buggy, Carol Rogers. Yeah, they did. They did take you. It was Jason Williamson's The Firm was fantastic at doing that, taking you under the wing, including people like Sue Natras and Betty Pounder. Like, if you were away from home, you got checked on, like, to make sure that you were okay, and, you know, they might pop around where you were staying or whatever. It was really, it was a fantastic environment, Yeah.
And this is 1972, so
1972.
A time before, you know, the musical theatre training schools existed.
That's right.
So The Firm is your school, really.
And I am so grateful that that's how I started in the industry, because, Jill Perryman was in the show. You learnt by watching these stars. You learnt how, you know, what goes on backstage, how you behave. It was, I mean, for goodness sake, we'd go from city to city, and we'd do on by train, and you'd arrive and you'd have to get off the train, and there was press there, and we had gloves on. I still sometimes I think, why were we wearing gloves? But nevertheless.
Like that scene in Funny Girl with the tugboat.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was
all
like.
Dressed up,
yeah. Some of these photos have come to light in the last few years, and I often wonder, why were we wearing gloves? Oh, well.
Did you play Perth?
We played Sydney, Brisbane. No, we didn't play Brisbane. Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, New Zealand.
So New Zealand was on the touring
yes,
leg at that point.
New Zealand.
Australasia.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So that finishes second big show after Anything
mm-hmm.
Goes. What's it like? You know, I watch newbies who do their first shows and Final Light comes along and it's devastating. Was it like that for you?
Yes, because we'd been together for close to 2 years. And you just become this huge family. And, it was, what do you do now?
Well, you do Irene.
Yeah, well, you do Irene, yeah. Well, that's funny too, because we did do Irene. By this stage, Pounder had been very instrumental in my life, and I was being taught, unbeknownst to me, how to be a dance captain, how to do this, how, you know, you were subtly being shown the ropes. So in other words, I think that they might have seen that I perhaps had sort of management type creative sort of instincts. So I was taught a lot of things that I didn't need to be taught. So then Irene came along, and at the same time so did Pippin, which Pounder was doing. And I desperately wanted to audition for Pippin. I so wanted to audition for Pippin. I was 17 or 18, and Pounder said, oh, no, you're not auditioning for that. There's another show coming. And I said, but I really want to audition. No, we've got something for you. And it turned out to be Irene. And I was dance captain in Irene. But also what happened, there's that big Irish scene in the middle of it. And so I had the Irish dance feature, of course, of dancing on three barrels. So that's where she...
So she knew that stylistically you had the chops for Irene.
Yeah. And as well as making me dance captain, so thrown into the fire, control this company, and I was understudy too. I was understudy to Joni Brock. So
that's the thing, isn't it? There's always someone watching.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's true, because I do the same.
Yeah, you would do the same. Now, who might be right for a principal role down the track? Or who would be good in choreography or dance captain?
Or dance captains and things. Oh, I have my eyes out for them all the time. And as I say, Pound is the one that taught me how to do that, and I feel like this is paying back, because I have my own way of, well, I have my own way as a choreographer, I have my own way as a director, and in managing people, and when I think about it, it's easily everything that I subconsciously absorb from working with Pounder.
Yeah. Because in the theatre, like any workplace, you have to manage a range of egos and personalities and relationships. And,
You have to. It's that. So you can, yes, you can be a great director or choreographer and all of those. But if you're going to be in anything in long term, I mean, it's different if it's sort of one show or one gig or whatever that's going to come and go. Then you don't have to really
4 weeks in the rehearsal.
Yes, you don't have to worry about extensions of that. But you certainly do. When you're casting or working with people, want to make sure that, you know, you're going to be able to work with these people. Yeah. Work and make sure that it's a happy environment. You can't control it, but you actually have to be able to preempt it and know how you'll deal with it.
Yeah.
For the good of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dames at Sea, I guess that allowed you an opportunity to work with that boy that you met at the Richmond. Was Sheldon
it
in that?
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Sheldon did, and we did. And Nancy Hayes directed it. And that was, oh, God, that was fun. And Jack Webster, Carrie Woods, it was a lovely little six-hander. And, yeah, we had a ball doing that show. It was fantastic.
Well, it's a lovely pastiche to old Hollywood, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah, some great numbers.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the role I played, which Mona Kent, was, you know, I'd seen that character in every movie that I'd ever seen. So it was, yeah, she was fun to play. Loved playing her.
Kiss Me, Kate, where did you do that?
Yes, that was also at Marion Street.
Right.
Yep. Roddy Dunbar, yep. And that was, that was a great venue. We did a lot of musicals out there. I choreographed a lot of musicals out there as well as performed in them. And huge training ground. Just the repertoire you go through. That's the fantastic thing. You know, it was just, you know, oh, we're doing, I can't even remember now some of the things, but I did a lot out there. And you just, oh, yes, I remember that show. Or Something's Afoot, never heard of that, let's do that. You know, so.
They did Seesaw out there too, didn't they?
They did. I wasn't involved in that, no.
But. So is choreography a natural progression for a dancer? A lot of dancers want to sort of choreograph?
Not necessarily. I always liked to choreograph. I did a lot of choreography when I first started for television as well as theatre. That's that Farnham and Byrne. I choreographed two episodes of that. That was Rick Birch all those years ago at the ABC. It was actually after A Chorus Line had finished, and the ABC put these budget aside for variety, and we would get, well, Farnham and Byrne had its first series, and then there was I'm trying to think of the name of the second series did, but I know I remember choreographing a thing called Troop Ship Follies, and it was all 30s and 40s, and you basically were given, you know, like, what sort of style would you like? Okay, let's build a show around that, and it had everybody that was working in theatre.
Yes, I've seen Troop Ship, I think. Geraldine was in that, wasn't she?
Geraldine, Troop Ship, dancing in that. I choreographed myself in that one. Yeah.
It's a different skill set, I guess, choreographing for a camera rather than an audience.
Yeah, it was a great learning curve too. Yeah. I learned a lot on that as well.
So it's all focused towards the camera, I guess, the choreography is.
Not necessarily.
No.
And that's where Ross Coleman was brilliant, because he'd grown up in television, particularly from Bandstand and things like that, and just the way that he choreographed and had it shot. We all learned a lot about that from there too, as well as the ABC and Rick Birch and all of his team. They were there, they wanted us to succeed, and they wanted to make the series very good. So everybody helped everybody go, no, that looks good that way, but why don't you, you know, do it there? So again, how lucky were we? We talk about that, a lot of us that were involved at the time, saying nothing like that happens anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those opportunities. What about choreographing for a large canvas, which you did with the Olympics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another fabulous thing. Well, that was, thank you, David Atkins. It was a very surreal moment in my life when David called and said, there's a section that I think you'd be perfect for. That's why, because it had all the Irish dancing in it.
Of course.
It did. It had all that tin and all of that. So, but of course, it was so much bigger than that, with all the circus and things. And he said, "I think that you'd be right for this." And the director of this, the director was Nigel Jamieson, who I'd worked with Nigel before on Sydney Festival, where we did a mini version of Ned's the Kellys on the forecourt. And so it was from that that they built the idea bigger to be part of the opening. But I remember there was a gentleman called Doug Jack, who they brought out from America, and he did a lot of Olympics, and he works with all the individual teams. And the first meeting that we had, we sat down and he rolled out all these like templates of the ground, and he just said, "Great." He said, "So see this? Anything that's in your head, nothing's too big. Any idea, anything that you think that you would love to see, you know, drawn up on a storyboard and then followed through, nothing's out of bounds." Now, again, that never happens, and you just, yeah.
Get
so,
the
yeah.
To do it.
So can I have 3,000 people on the thing? Yes. Can you? Yeah, so it was, yeah.
So what are the logistics of managing that, though? Do you have a support team of
yes,
of,
you do.
Oh, yeah, dance they have captains who go and teach? Or?
Dance captains, but also just, you know, what do you call them? The people that sort of marshal everybody, because then you'd have to break down. If you're on tin sheet number 8, that's 400 of you that are going to be there. This is your team. So it was broken up into teams. And some of the major basic choreography we would do out in huge warehouses. And you'd be standing up on a podium and you'd have little dance captains in front of everyone on the floor, and you on a stage would sort of do it. So it was like, yeah, a mass class. Arms moving and, yeah. Yeah, extraordinary.
Well, a lot of maths comes into
choreography, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For shapes and and movements and, oh, yeah, a lot of maths. Funny why I wasn't very good at maths at school, though. I could do it when if I had to work with a couple of dancers, I was great.
Costume design's really important also for dance, isn't it?
Yeah.
What can be done and
well,
not too restrictive.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, how brilliant was that when they'd say, so we're going to have, we want all of a sudden all these men racing down the stadium with these huge sheets of corrugated iron on their back, and which was just making all these glorious shapes and everything. And then all of a sudden you hear this, like, it's outback Australian early 1800s, 1900s, but always had an Irish feel, you know, lilt to it. Throw it down, and then all of a sudden 800 dancers would jump up on there that had umbrellas, and then they would turn. It was, you know, the design of it was, you had an idea and then they flew with it. Just the design was just amazing.
Magic.
Yeah.
Back to a chorus line, 1977, playing Cassie, a role created by Donna McKechnie on Broadway. And then a few years later you do Company at the SDC, playing another Donna McKechnie role April, I think.
April?
Yeah. And the TikTok.
Again with Tony Sheldon.
All right, Sheldon again. So he pops up a bit.
Yeah.
You don't know me yet, but you will. Yeah. So you could be our Australia's Donna McKechnie.
Oh, that's a great honour if that ever came about. But I did, yes.
It's reflective of, obviously, the skill and prowess that you had as a dancer.
Yes, well, that Company, I think the TikTok dance out of Company was the precursor for Cassie's dance in a chorus line. When you look at the chore from...
Because Bennett choreographed both.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
So when you look at that, you can see a lot of where it sort of originated from. Just, you know, in some of the lines. And I mean, she has her very own individual style. I know. And I met Donna too. So I was in Australia about 10 years ago, I think she was out here and she was just doing her one-woman show, and I saw her out at the Enmore and I got the chance to meet her and we had a good old chat. So,
she'll be thrilled.
It was lovely. It was lovely.
Well, did you know much about A Chorus Line before it hit? Because it was huge.
I have another friend of mine who was in shows with me, Neville Burns, who did everything for Williamson's Fiddler right through. He was Promises. He had done so many shows. And when you know, in the end, when you used to go on tour, you'd either stay at a friend's, they'd say, "Oh, I've got a room, you know, you can rent out. So I often used to stay when I was on tour down at Neville's house. Anyway, I was there and he often go overseas and look at everything on Broadway or off Broadway. And Chorus Line was off Broadway at the time. And he came back to Melbourne. And he just said to me, he said, I saw a show. It's called A Chorus Line. They do it, if they ever do it out here, you'll be doing Cassie. And I just went, oh, I'll have to look this up. So, yeah, that was serendipitous. Yeah.
I love just then, to the listener, when Karen was looking this up, you played the keyboard as if you're going to look it up on a computer. But, of course, you couldn't do that, could you?
No.
You'd have to read Plays and Players.
Yeah, that's
something.
Right.
Or talk to Tony Sheldon.
Yeah, that's right. Sheldon would have known all about it.
Reg Livermore and choreography. You performed in a few of his shows, Wonder Woman, Sacred Cow, and Turns you choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like working with Reg?
Another mentor.
Yeah.
I had, you know, as we all did from Betty Blockbuster, I mean, it was such a, oh my God, this is, how spectacular is this man, and the show, it was like nothing we'd ever seen, and just taking theatre in another direction, and the brilliance was gobsmacking. So when that was announced that he was going to do the second show, Wonder Woman, I really wanted to be in the show, but of course I knew that it was the Reginas, which were the four singers, and basically they were singers, like really top singers that he had, and great band. But nevertheless, I just thought, no, I want to audition, because, you know, I'd do anything to try and, you know, be in that style of theatre. And I'd never sung anything but 30s and 40s and 50s musicals. So I raced out and brought my sheet music of Where Do I Go? I think it's From Here. I can't even remember what it was, but it was something I'd never sung before in my life. And I thought, oh, no, I have to be that. If I can't just sing anything ridiculous, they'll just say, go away. And I walked in, and I remember auditioning at the old Glebe Street Theatre, where Rocky first started and all of that. And I walked in. It's where Reg originally played Rocky Horror.
Right.
It was that theatre. And so I remember walking on stage, and all I could see was lit at the back and his afro there. Outline of his afro, terrified. But anyway, I walked away thinking, oh, that was just useless. That was, and I got the job, and I then eventually started choreographing for him, and then just went on to be his choreographer for quite some time. Yeah.
And how nice, a few decades later, to work with him. Was it again since then with My Fair Lady?
My Fair Lady. And of course, Regis the Wizard. So I put Regis.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
So
we've been in one another's lives for quite some time.
Yeah.
So again, lucky mentors. These are mentors that you just, and as you alluded to earlier, that was our school. That's how you learned. There was, you know, I mean, obviously dance school, it's disciplined and traditional, and so you have that to build on. And then you absorb all these wonderful, wonderful performers and everything that they bring to their characters. And not only that, how you behave backstage, how you treat people. Very lucky. I was surrounded by a lot of fabulous people.
You must be a sponge.
I was.
Be,
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Directing Annie.
Yes.
That was a thrill. When you actually handed...
Yes.
The controls to the machine, and
yes,
you could do what you wanted.
Oh, it was fantastic. And, you know, and not something that was, you know, alien to me. Like, we all knew the show. It was my cup of tea, absolutely my cup of tea. And again, to be given a cast of Anthony Waller, Nancy Hayes, Todd McKenney, Chloe Dallimore, you know, not hard.
No.
Not hard. It was a joy to work. And
well, they say 80% of directing is successful casting.
Exactly, and
yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I think looking at Wicked, it's true.
Yeah.
Like, right down to every member of that ensemble. It's, you know, it's, we look at them, and a lot of us that have done all the shows, they come out and we can immediately see everybody that was in that costume on the first production or the second production. It's such a thing, but they're all perfectly cast. So
it must be a special skill. This is back to Annie now, working with kids. W.C. Fields said never work with children or animals. Well, and Annie, you've got both.
You've got both, and you've got three sets of everything. That the hardest thing about rehearsing a show like Annie these days, or any show with kids, is that you have to have three casts. So imagine doing that every... I remember poor Anthony Waller each time. We'd go to, you know, start with one Annie in the morning and tea break, come back, he's got another one. And I just thought, that's hard. Like every time you turn around, there's a different little face in front of you.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, it is hard.
And you're modifying your performance slightly, I suppose, with each kid and what you get or don't get from them.
That's true. And Anthony did talk about that, you know, just what, you know, and they're young, they're littlies, like they're very incredibly talented, but they're still young and they're, you know, they come in the theatre one night and maybe they've been upset from something that happened at school, and you can't say to, you know, a 9 or 10 year old, leave it at the stage door. You can't. You have to sort of work with it, nurture it, and so that is an added skill. Yeah. But I had enough experience teaching dance with kids as well, so that helped me with a lot of, you know, okay, kids, come on, focus.
But it's amazing, you know, with little ones that are so young. I'm thinking of Billy Elliot and Matilda and Annie. These kids are like, they're 11 going on 45.
Yes.
I mean, the maturity and the ability that they have in executing their roles is extraordinary.
Oh, I think of Billy Elliot particularly. That, yeah, I look at that I know there would have been a few of them, of course, with all kids, but still technically that was a show for that Billy Elliot's that had to do, and it's like, whoa, you really have to be able to make sure that you've got a solid grounding with anyone that plays that role.
And the kid is also doing an accent on top of everything.
Yes, exactly. Oh, there's some amazing kids out there, amazing actors. Because the world's opened up. Like, there's nothing they haven't seen or will look up. As you said, I did that before, but, you know, as if I had a keyboard. But
well, that's right. We had to get cast albums and read the back and who was in the ensemble, etc. Now these kids can go and actually watch performances from Broadway.
Yeah, that's right.
Through YouTube or
They can see anything. There's nothing that's new to them. Like, you know, that's good and bad.
Yes.
Good and bad.
You talk about mentors. I assume Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews
would have been a mentor as well.
A mentor and just a great friend. That was an experience for all of us working with her, she was so generous in letting us help her too, because she said, I've never really directed this. I mean, she's directed, but she said something of this, like this scale. But, I mean, she was the original. It was in her bones. There was nothing that she was just like, oh, no, that needs to be this. Or that needs to be said like this. Or this needs to happen. And, it, you know, she was fabulous as a director. It was just all visual. She knew. She could hear the cadence of everything. It was amazing.
60 years later.
Yes. Yeah, from doing it.
Do you think you could return to No No Nanette and stage it as you did it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I do.
Well, when you talk about you can see everybody in the mirror in that dressing room.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that photographic.
I think your early shows and things like that, when, you know, something that you wanted for such a long time happens and that you're finally in there, that a lot of that stays. I can remember the Happy Tap. I can remember Tea for Two. I can remember probably the whole choreography of that show. Irene bits as it goes on, chorus line, that's indelibly imprinted. I still do Cassie's Dance when I'm asleep, you know, and but those early shows, absolutely, they just stick with you.
Well, John Frost, if you're listening, why don't we see a revival of No 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 Ned or a chorus line? We'll keep you working, Karen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So, your next show that you're about to go on to, you're extraordinary juggling all these shows at once, as you will be soon.
Mm.
A return of Chicago, the musical.
Yeah.
Which again, you're working again with Anthony Warlow.
Yes, I'm very thrilled about that. Very thrilled. It's another one of those shows that are like Wicked for me. That it's almost like going home. I mean, and it's a dancer show. Like it's joyful for me just to watch and direct. I can see it, and I can see so many people playing all of these roles, but the heart of the show never changes, and you know, the storytelling never changes. It's just fabulous, new people in those roles.
Had you ever danced a Fosse choreography in your career?
Yes, when we did Cabaret, and Ross Coleman choreographed it.
Because Ross was our Bob Fosse.
He was, yeah. And everything was so much like that. So, yeah, I felt like I really had a good handle on Fosse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your role with Chicago? I imagine you've sat on
associate.
The audition panel to
yes,
cast it.
Yes, cast it, yep.
And
so,
as associate, what do you do?
Yes, well, rehearsals. So like this, the US creative teams come out, you work with them. I've worked with all of these creative teams so many times through the years now, and go through the rehearsal in case there's any little changes. There were not really many in this. Lisa, our US director, said, oh, we've morphed a little, there's little bits and pieces of changes, but really little. Chicago, really not so much. That's a standalone. I mean, everybody knows every move of that show. So, yeah, just going through the rehearsal period, working with the actors, working with the dancers, getting the style, get the storytelling out. And then once it opens, I'm just doing here, get the understudies up and running, and then just maintain both shows. A lot of flying.
Do you spend much time at home?
Yeah, well, I will at the moment because this is here for 6 months,
right.
You know, so we'll be here for quite some time.
When you talked about flying, I thought you were referring to flying monkeys, but of course you were talking about flying around the country.
I am talking about flying around the country. Through these last sort of 15, 20 years, my frequent flyer points are quite good, or were.
That's nice. Once the show is up and running, do you have to be there every night, or...?
At the moment, I do.
Yeah, because it's...
So that's the difference, I think, between residents and associates. Resident directors normally have to be there the whole time. However, I think most of us agree these days, and you can be there, but if you watched 8 shows a week, you wouldn't be doing yourself nor the cast any favours because you'd start looking for things that don't need to be looked at. You need to keep it fresh. You need to keep it from an audience perspective and also technically that the show and everything is running the way that it should, makeup, wigs, you know, all of that. But I try to see 4 or 5 shows a week. Then I'll whittle it down to 4. And I think that's a safe and fresh way of looking at the show. Yeah.
Are you able to sit there on opening night and actually just enjoy the show, or are you continually...
I did this time because in the end, there's no more you can do. So there's... And if anything happens tonight, I can't... In the tech period, we can control it. No, let's do that again. No, let's fix that. But once it's there, it's handed over to the stage management. It's handed over. So there's nothing you can do. And I did enjoy it because I had my son with me and a couple of really good close friends. And they all hadn't seen it before. So I enjoyed watching them.
Yeah.
See it. So, yeah, I did. Yeah.
With so many opening nights in your career, is there a routine that you go through?
There used to be. I was always in the theatre, like as a performer, definitely. Oh, in the theatre as early as I possibly can. And just to calm the nerves and to do extra, if I wanted to run something. I was always someone that wanted to run everything, even not just as we call a smart mark or... You know, get on the stage or get into the rehearsal room or, you know, I just like to warm up, like pre-training before you got onto stage. So, yeah, I did have a pretty strong routine.
just sort of something that I used to do, which I think about now. And when I was doing a chorus line, I remember an hour before every show, I had to have, and it was it an hour? Yes, it was an hour before every show, I had to have a glass of sustagen, but not on milk, otherwise I wouldn't be able to sing. Probably sustagen would have clogged my throat anyway, but with water, because I used to think, I'd read the thing that you, with after an hour after taking sustagen, you got a boost of energy. And I used to work out, that's just in time for Cassie's dance in the song. How ridiculous. But it was in my head.
I'm sure it worked psychologically.
It did
too.
Work psychologically, like, and if I didn't get that sustagen, oh boy, I had a bad show.
You'd establish a routine.
Oh, it's crazy. But it's what you do.
I think it's Morales in the show who sings What I Did for Love.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful anthem about all the sacrifices that dancers make for their career. Do you think you missed out on anything being a dancer? Just added to your life?
Yeah, I didn't miss out on anything. I was... The only thing I think I missed out on was that I wanted to be in Pippin. I think that's the only thing I ever missed out on. You know, when you look back, we were lucky. We went from show to show. We went from, like, Anything Goes to Nanette, to Irene, to, believe it or not, we did The Wiz out here, and I was dance captain and all of that with Williamson's in The Wiz. And, yeah, and then I started doing, you know, my own choreography, and then I started doing smaller independent shows, and I never stopped working. I never stopped working until when I decided to have my family, and then I would stay in Sydney, and if something came up, fine, and if it didn't, it didn't. So, yeah. No regrets. The only regrets are the knee pain and the back pain now and everything, but hey, that's it.
And have you got your original knees?
I do.
Good.
There's a question about whether the one might need a bit of handiwork, but I put all of that off as much as I can. Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Your frequent flyers are going to
get
a boost again.
Continue.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, Chicago opens in Perth in November.
Yes.
And then plays Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney. We get to see it again.
Yes.
So, yeah, lovely. Karen Johnson-Mortimer, it's been absolutely a treat to talk to you. You've been on my list of want to talk to's for a long time, so I'm glad that we could finally do it.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a joy. Thank you very much.
You can see Karen's splendid work along with the company of musicians, actors and crew that she's now working with on a couple of our favourite shows. Of course, Wicked, which has opened at Sydney's Lyric Theatre at The Star. It has been playing since the 25th of August. And you can get tickets through the usual means, but also you might like to go into the digital lottery, which you can access via the TodayTix app. It's a wonderful way to hopefully secure a cheaper ticket, which we see a lot of companies releasing those tickets for a lot of the shows, so it's good to be in touch with what's available. Also, Chicago, of course, that wonderful Candor and Ebb musical. It sees Anthony Warlow's return to Australian stages after quite a while. It opens at the Crown Theatre in Perth from 21st of November, then plays Brisbane at the Lyric Theatre from the 2nd of January, goes to Melbourne at the Madge from the 23rd of March, and then we see it in Sydney at the Capitol Theatre from the 9th of June. Two great shows not to be missed. Thanks for joining us in this episode. You can catch all of the episodes featured in the podcast thus far by visiting our website, www.stagespodcast.com.au. Or you can, of course, access the podcast through the usual means, Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you find your favourite podcasts. And, of course, tell all your friends because it helps us reach a wider audience, of course. I'm Peter Ayers. Keep well, keep warm, stay safe. And I'll catch you next time on Stages.